Well, our host here informed me yesterday that he was expecting some of his co-workers to come, so he wanted a Krishna Consciousness 101 program. So that's what I've done, except not very many of his co-workers came. Okay. So this is dedicated to you. Because you thank you. How long have you known one another?
About a year.
How is he at work? Good. How is supervisor?
I am.
Okay. So the topic that I thought, Krishna Consciousness 101, I was just thinking some of the questions that are commonly asked. So a real common one is, why is there suffering? And there's different versions of that question. Some are curiosity, some are doubt-filled. Some really want to know. So, this is an introduction, but it's also for those of you that are asked such a question, how might you answer such a question? Like kirtan. More kirtan. So, we're okay? A common problem. A reason that people have a doubt about this is because they don't want to take responsibility, they want to blame God. So it starts with generally, if God is all good and all powerful, why does he create a situation where people are suffering? You know, the reverse of it is, it's like he just took the sweater off and it's in reverse, so you take that statement and turn it in reverse, and the reverse is, must be that there's not God. Either that or he's mean and cruel. Because otherwise, why is there suffering?
Somebody's cell
phone. Those who have a cell phone, please do the needful. We'll see if the ecstasy subsides a little bit. Ecstatic vibration. Maybe you just have kirtan for the rest of the day. Short answer is that the material situation is compared to a dream. And in someone's dream, maybe dreaming that they're a king on a throne and they're enjoying. But while they're the king on the throne enjoying, suddenly a tiger comes into the palace and runs towards the throne, and he's not enjoying anymore. He's very much afraid. He gets up and starts running, and he's running and running, and he's fearful, and he's suffering, and then he wakes up. There was no tiger. There was no throne. There was no enjoyment. There was no suffering. It was all illusion. You have a can of 3-in-1 oil? Put a little on that hinge there. Knock out your buzzer and your door. Or should we just have kirtan? You can't see what I see. There's all this program going on back here. Come on in. Enjoy the program. It's been a long weekend. If you think you're going to have some time recovering, what about me? Take off that squeaky door. He's just waiting till I get started and then he's going to squeak it again. Huh? You're going to leave it open?
Yeah.
Okay. Just waiting for the buzzer to ring again. Excuse me. Okay. Try again. So, reality and illusion, and what is suffering is forgetfulness of Krishna. And what is in the category of forgetfulness of Krishna, call it enjoying or suffering, it's all suffering. Or in Krishna's language in Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvanao Lokar, Purnar Arvartanorjuna. One should not aspire for Brahmaloka and all the way down to Patala Loka and every place in between and every situation therein, it's all suffering. He says because repeated birth and death take place, but in that in between birth and in between death is but a dream or that which is not. And to be searching for happiness in that which is not doesn't bring happiness. It's the suffering is the forgetfulness of Krishna. So, who is responsible for forgetfulness of Krishna? Krishna or those who forget him? We in the soul connection discussion we had we spent some time with japa. And one of the things, close the door. What to do? It's just an illusion. It's the old, yeah, just bad dream. Yeah, just keep talking, just like it didn't happen. Right? Like I said, it's been a long time. Okay. We have an eternal relationship with Krishna. But we decided, not Krishna decided, to turn our back on Krishna and say, forget it. And because we did that, we're seeing darkness. Prabhupada gives this example. You're looking at light. It's a very simple example. I vividly remember his soul. You're looking at the sun. What do you see? You see light. You turn your back to the sun, and what do you see? Darkness or shadow. And there's not a third thing. There's light or there's darkness. And we made the decision to turn our back upon Krishna, and therefore there's shadow. And that shadow, it's there's suffering. Or another way of saying the same thing. What's the root cause of suffering? Ignorance. Ignorance means we're ignoring Krishna. That's the essence of ignorance. We're ignoring Krishna. And then there's varieties of ignorance. And you can even call it sattva and rajas and tamas. But it's all, the essence of it is forgetfulness of the modes of nature act upon the conditioned soul because the conditioned soul desires enjoyment apart from Krishna. Would you like to hear it in Krishna's language from the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Nature is said to be the cause. Karya karanam kartritve hetu prakriti ruchate. Text 21, chapter 13. If you want to explain why is there suffering, chapter 13, text 21, 22. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. How are we the cause of sufferings in this world? It's the free will choices that we make. There's varieties of suffering. There's varieties of enjoyment in this material world. So it's a limited range. We don't have an unlimited capacity to enjoy, nor do we have an unlimited capacity to suffer, because we're limited. And the degree of suffering depends upon the degree of misuse of free will. It's something like a leash. We're conditioned souls. So we get a shorter leash or a longer leash. We got a leash. We don't have unlimited free will. We don't have no leash or no rope to tether ourselves. The mode of goodness allows more freedom. The mode of passion, less freedom. The mode of ignorance, less freedom. But even in the mode of goodness, it's restricted. But by the choices of action and the modes of nature with which we choose to associate, that determines the reaction and the qualities of happiness or distress in our life. The operative principle is free will. With free will, we're responsible for the choices we previously made. How long is our leash? What tendencies for involvement with the modes of nature do we have? What pushings, due to the seeds of karma that are stored within us, when they fructify, they push towards performing some additional type of action and happiness and distress accordingly. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The next verse is equally on point. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The different manifestations of the body and senses among the living entities are due to material nature. Material nature awards bodies. But material nature doesn't do so whimsically or arbitrarily. It's according to the karma of the living entity, which is according to his free will choices previously made. There are 8,400,000 different species of life. And these varieties and creations of the material nature. Excuse me, and these varieties are creations of material nature. They arise from different sensual pleasures of the living entity, who thus desires to live in this body or that. So, Prabhupada's common example, if someone in a human body desires very much the taste of blood through eating meat, so that's not what the human body is designed for, so in the next life they'll get a body that's designed for eating meat and blood. A tiger or some other animal, carnivorous animal, based upon that free will choice, misuse of the human form of life leads to that type of a body, or can lead to that type of a body. His material happiness and distress are due to his body and not due to himself as he is, meaning as the spirit soul. The material happiness and suffering are not on the platform of the soul, they're on the platform of the body or the mind. In his original state, there's no doubt of enjoyment. That is his real state. Because of the desire to lord it over material nature, this is the turning our back on Krishna. If we turn our back on Krishna and try to enjoy that which is his energy, then we implicate ourselves in the laws of material nature. The soul literally identifies himself with being not soul and being matter, or a product of matter, and thus matter. Scientists tell us, we're a product of matter. What's life? Combination of elements, according to the laws of nature. And throw in a little chance. Sounds like a chutney. Only it's chance. It's really been a long weekend. That's not over yet. Okay. Because of the desire to lord it over material nature, he's in the material world. In the spiritual world, there's no such thing. And when you're awake, the dream doesn't exist. The spiritual world is pure, but in the material world, everyone is struggling hard to acquire different kinds of pleasure for the body. It might be more clear to state that this body is the effect of the senses. What does that mean? The effect of the senses. So the senses want enjoyment. So we go, you know, the senses go complain to the mind, I want to enjoy. And the mind says, Mr. Intelligence, can you please come here? Yes, sir. Reporting for duty, sir. These guys over here, the senses, they want to enjoy. You got it? So you got to figure out how to get them to enjoy, right? You got it? I may have to go to school for a bunch of years to figure it out, but I'm sure I can do it. Okay, you got a job, we'll hire you. Go to school for a bunch of years, and you're to serve those senses. You got it? Okay. Yes, sir. And it's upside down. Because this way, the senses are here, the mind is here, the intelligence is here. And the soul is screaming, saying, let me out of here. I was supposed to enjoy, but I'm suffering. How come there's suffering? There must be something wrong with God. It's because we put things in it's topsy-turvy. It's the rebellious nature of the soul brings upon that illusion. So the senses are desiring. Yehi sam sparsha jabhoga. It's right in that phrase, second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Sam sparsha ja. Born of the desire of the senses to contact sense objects in the mood of enjoyment. Bhoga. Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukkha, yonaya evate. Distress takes birth within the yoni of that within the womb of that expectation of happiness when the senses meet sense objects. So, dukkha, or suffering, is born. And that suffering, the instrument of that suffering, is the body. But it was supposed to be nice. I was supposed to enjoy. And it turned out suffering. I bought a used car, and I thought it was going to be a good car, and it turned out to be a lemon. It was a bad bargain. I wanted happiness, and I got distress. The senses are instruments for gratifying desire. Now, the sum total, that is, body and instrumental senses, are offered by material nature, and, as will be clear in the next verse, the living entity is blessed or damned with circumstances according to his past desire and activity. So it's very clear. Once placed in some, so we're desiring enjoyment, we're given a body to match that desire for enjoyment and also our deserve. Once placed in some particular kind of body, he comes under the control of the material nature, because the body being matter acts according to the laws of nature. At that time, the living entity has no power to change that law. For example, suppose a living entity is put into the body of a dog. So what happens when a living entity gets the body of a dog? He barks. He wags his tail. He chews on bones. He does dog things because he's got a dog body. Same living entity takes the body of a king. What does he do? He sits on a throne. Wears a crown. He does the king things. Becomes a demigod. He controls universal affairs. It's the same soul. According to the position of embodiment, according to the desire and the deserve, one becomes conditioned by that body, and the laws of nature don't change during the tenure of that embodiment. We're just reaping the fruits of our past karma and guna, our association with the modes of nature. It's called the body. We're responsible for the choices that got that body. Material nature just supplies the body. You can't blame material nature. We can't blame the superintendent of material nature. We can try to blame somebody else, but we should. It's our responsibility. So here's the next verse. It reinforces the same understanding. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sad asad yoni janmasu. The living entity in material nature follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. It's our association with the modes of nature that produces the suffering or the enjoyment. Supposing we're in an unfortunate situation, we can choose consciously to associate with a higher mode of nature. Or we can just choose to go with the flow, as they say, and just be of the lower nature. That pushing is there. So we just go with the flow. Call it Taoism. Go with the flow. Or we can choose elevation and taking training how by good association one can come to the quality of goodness. That's also conditioning or binding upon the living entity, but we can choose that. Good. We can choose to act in goodness. We can choose the words that we speak. We can choose the literature that we study, the objects that our eyes come in contact with, the food that we eat, the association that we keep. We can choose the quality of goodness in our life. Or we can choose passion, or we can choose ignorance. there's free will involved. And according to that choice of the action, the choice of association with the modes of nature, we're in effect choosing the good fortune or the misfortune in our life, or the happiness or the suffering in our life, just according to the laws of nature. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This verse is very important for understanding how the living entity transmigrates from one body to another. It is explained in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita that the living entity is transmigrating from one body to another just as one changes dress. So it's winter time, we have our winter garments. Summertime comes, change of garments. We're still the same person, just garments change. This change of dress is due to his attachment to material existence. As long as he is captivated by this false manifestation, that material attachment to the covering only, he has to continue transmigrating from one covering to another covering. It's like, so if our consciousness goes there into the realm of matter, and literally one identifies oneself to be matter, like I am this body, or that's not so commonly used, but more commonly used is to say I'm American, or I'm Indian, or I'm black, or I'm white, or I'm young, or I'm old, or going on a subtle plane, I'm smart, or I'm slow. Or I'm beautiful or ugly, or, you know, wealthy or poor, or, you know, the various designations of, you know, what label the body has. The designations of body and mind. And think that's me. You know, I get angry. I'm my mind. I'm that type of person that when somebody says something mean, I can't take it. I let them have it. That's me. I'm the mind. When one identifies with the covering, that guarantees the transmigration of the soul will continue, and that's suffering. Due to his desire to lord it over material nature, he's put into such undesirable circumstances. Under the influence of material desire, the living entity is born sometimes as a demigod, sometimes as a man, sometimes as a beast, sometimes as a bird, a worm, an aquatic, a saintly man, as a bug. This is going on. Prabhupada liked that phrase. And in all cases, the living entity thinks himself to be the master of his circumstances. Yet he is under the influence of material nature. How he is put into different bodies is explained here as due to association with the different modes of nature. So, karanam guna sangosya, guna sangha, according to the association of the gunas. Then, we're put into a certain situation. Change your association with the modes of nature, the circumstance changes. You want to be happy? Associate with that mode of nature that factually delivers happiness. Unfortunately, none of the modes of nature factually deliver happiness. There's the conditioned by happiness sense of the mode of goodness. Krishna describes happiness in the mode of goodness. In the beginning, it seems very bitter. And the end is like nectar. So like tapasya. Beginning, you know, like going to school. I want to play. But mommy and daddy say go to school. So I go to school. It's tapasya. But at least, you know, this is this idea of there's a longer term gain. So with actual mode of goodness activity, at the beginning it may seem unpleasant, but it brings a sense of happiness when it's factually in the mode of goodness. One becomes conditioned by that sense of happiness. by the sense of being a kind person, a compassionate person, a truthful person, a clean person, an honest person, there's a happiness that goes with that, that we all have experienced. You do some act of kindness for someone and you feel good about it. That's conditioned by the happiness of the mode of goodness. And then passion. You know, you win. You're the victor and the other guy loses. Or you're successful in some material endeavor. So there's some happiness, and then, you know, the market crashes and the economy's gone. You lose everything, or at least half of everything. People are devastated. Anyway, so it's suffering. In the beginning it seems like nectar, in the end it seems like it's poison. And the happiness in the mode of goodness, it's poison in the beginning and poison in the end. And people think it's happiness, like alcoholism. It's nasty, and it's suffering, and there's an addiction to that happiness in the mode of ignorance. It's just the modes of nature. Take your pick. Or, what Krishna is recommending in Bhagavad Gita is Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nish Trigunya Bhavarjana. The real position of happiness is go beyond Nish Trigunya Bhavarjana, go beyond all the modes of nature. And so what's that, beyond the modes of nature? It's where happiness is not within material nature. Happiness is not in terms of that which we are not. Happiness is in terms of that which we are. So that's enlightenment. It requires enlightenment to get to that happiness. That enlightenment is something that it descends by mercy from the Supreme. The whole of Bhagavad Gita's message is to give that. By acting virtuously, acting according to the duties that one should perform without attachment to the result, but acting as obligated to do, that's the mode of goodness. Become situated in the mode of goodness in various ways, and then dedicate that activity to Vishnu, Yajnavai Vishnu. And not just dedicate the results of the activity to Krishna, that's karma yoga, or karma pala tyag, renouncing the fruits of the work and offering the fruit to Krishna. But on the higher platform is mind completely absorbed in Krishna and intelligence always absorbed in doing his service. Not just the results go to Krishna, but everything goes to Krishna. Your very life, your very activity, your words, your everything goes to Krishna. And then that's no longer association with the modes of nature. Even you're in the field of material energy. The modes do not act on one whose consciousness is transcendental. I'll say it again. The modes do not act upon one whose consciousness is transcendental. So that's the position of happiness, transcendental happiness. Leaving aside that transcendental happiness, it's all suffering. And what's the cause of that suffering? Our free will that says, see you later, Krishna. I want to enjoy independently. My dear friend, there's no such thing. I want to enjoy independently. Like a child having a little temper tantrum. I want to enjoy. You can't. I want to enjoy. All right. You can't. So I'll give you an illusion. You try to enjoy the illusion. Okay, I want to enjoy. But there's consequences. I want to enjoy. Sounds like somebody you know? Prabhat. Oh, there's Prabhat. He's smiling.
Huh? He got the joke.
He got it, okay. It's been a long week. And then there's, when as long as there's forgetfulness of Krishna, even when one gets that object, so it looks, that's the mode of passion, fruitive, I got the object. It's not enjoyment. It's suffering because the real happiness in relation with Krishna is forgotten. And guess what? That object suddenly just disappears. And the happiness that one was expecting, one feels great disappointment because it's asat. Sat cannot find happiness in asat. There's no happiness in asat. It's only a dream. It's only illusion. So, if God is all good and God is all powerful, why does he create illusion? Why doesn't he just say no? Some people say like that. If free will is the problem, why did God give us free will? And the answer to that one is a nice answer. If there was no free will, there would be no love. But there is love. But love is a free will choice, because there's the option to say no. Instead, we say yes. And you can say a consistent yes to the Supreme Lord, and that's happiness. And you say no, and then there's illusion. And that illusion, whatever the variety of it is, from the topmost down to the lowest, it's all suffering. Sat asad yoni janmasu. We just associate with varieties of modes of nature and get bodies that get old. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, doshanudarshanam. This is an item of knowledge Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita. A learned person understands the real problem isn't that, you know, I'm feeling unhappy today. Yesterday I was feeling more happy, today I'm feeling less happy, and it's been like this, actually, I'm expecting it's going to be unhappy for quite some time. The economy's going to be bad for quite some time. And I just invested all my earnings in something, and it's all gone now. So what am I going to do? Or whatever it is. Suffering. So it's just simple, wake up. It's only a dream. Well, what's the reality? The reality is our relationship with Krishna. And it's really it's really that simple. But you know, we're attached. We're attached to suffering in our dream. And trying to make it, like, steer it in such a way it becomes nice. Nice dream. You want to add anything? Why is there suffering on the theme? Okay. Any thoughts out there in our audience? Yes.
Maharaj, thank you very much. In the purport to 1322, a little bit further down, Prabhupada speaks about changing the quality of our association with the modes by hearing.
Uh-huh. Okay. Should I read it?
Yeah.
Unless one is situated in Krishna consciousness, his material consciousness will oblige him to transfer from one body to another because he has material desires since time immemorial. But he has to change that conception. That change can be effected only by hearing from authoritative sources. The best example is here. Arjuna is hearing the signs of God from Krishna. The living entity, if he submits to this hearing process, will lose his long-cherished desire to dominate material nature. And gradually, and proportionally, as he reduces his long desire to dominate, he comes to enjoy spiritual happiness. In a Vedic mantra, it is said that as he becomes learned in association with the Supreme Personality, Godhead, he proportionally relishes his eternal blissful life. So, comment?
Question. How do we increase the effectiveness of our hearing? Particularly when many times when we hear, the filters are fully on and so on. And if we're not able to get, most of the time we're not able to get the full message that the speaker is trying to give to us. How do we make our hearing more effective so we can actually...
Bhagavatam teaches several things. Bhagavatam teaches regard for the speaker. First canto is filled with that message. Each time a different speaker is introduced, sometimes it's Sutta Goswami, sometimes it's Vidura, sometimes it's Shukadeva Goswami, sometimes it's different speakers. And when different speakers, how the receiver of the message should receive the fullness of the message starts with a deep respect and regard for the speaker. You know, opening one's consciousness by regarding what are those qualifications of that speaker. So opening the heart to respect is one. And an eagerness to receive. Brahma jigyasa is Sanskrit, but not just inquisitive like, you know, getting some information, but inquisitive in the sense of I really want to know. Eagerness. Another is a willingness to set aside another conception. If the conception that I receive is superior, I'm, you know, very happy to take a look at this conception, that conception, and let go of the inferior conception. In favor, so a degree of detachment from status quo. And a willingness to serve. Tadyati pranipatina praniprasanina sevaya, this willingness to serve. Like when we read this afternoon about Gautama Rishi accepting Satyakama, immediately he engaged in some service. That the rendering of service, nityam bhagavata sevaya, the rendering service unto the person Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat increases our capacity to hear, an eagerness to serve, a service attitude helps us receive transcendental knowledge, makes us more receptive. Okay. Yes.
For everything, we understand that we need mercy.
For everything, we need mercy.
Everything, we need mercy. And so, so coming to this material world...
Here comes the mercy.
And even though we are in association, sometimes we feel that, you know, the first word from Bhagavad Gita, we understand that we are the body, we are not the soul. But still, time to time, I feel like I'm diverting. Oh, I'm still a body. So that means, it's, as you said, it's my mistake. It's nothing but Krishna's mistake.
Yeah.
But for everything, the mercy has to flow. In that case...
And for some more mercy. Now, please remember, you're not that body.
How every is a person can a person get the mercy so that he can go right on track without diverting?
Yes.
So, why does the mercy doesn't come to everyone?
Because they got their door shut. Or they're hiding under a rock. Or they're saying no.
The reason is, the people ask me some of the questions. Why Krishna, you said mercy is flowing everywhere, but why I'm not?
So they got their back to Krishna. And they're tapping their foot saying, you know, on my condition, Krishna, you come right here before me and then I'll accept your mercy. And if it doesn't come this way, then I understand you're not being merciful. You know, it's very selfish and, you know, a distorted conception of what mercy is. A transcendentalist is able to understand what mercy is. Like Brahma, we're reading in the Bhagavatam class about the Lord Varaha doing battle with Hiranyaksha and the first part of the battle, besides it's, you know, really exciting, he's just curbing the pride. Hiranyaksha is throwing all of his, you know, mystic powers and weapons and all of his stuff. And it's like, eh. But he's getting really discouraged. Then he tries to crush with his strong arms. The next thing he sees, he just slipped out of my arms and he's standing in front of me. Ooh. So he starts to pound with his fists. So Lord Varaha just taps him on the side of the head with his hoof. And he's finished. Seeing the form of Lord Varaha, and Lord Brahma, the demigods come, and Lord Brahma says, how glorious and fortunate is this death. Seeing the form of the Lord. Yogis on the topmost stage, they strive with great austerity and difficulty over long periods of time to fix their mind upon the form of the Lord so they can leave their body fixing their mind upon the form of the Lord. And just see how fortunate was this Hiranyaksha. So that's mercy. But, you know, to a transcendentalist, but someone that's not a transcendentalist, well, oh, look at that. Mean. He smashed him. If you're Mahatma Gandhi, then you would reject it. I'm serious. Yes, then I give up my Hinduism. He writes, if I have to accept that there was a battle of Kurukshetra and that Krishna induced Arjuna to fight the battle of Kurukshetra, I give up my Hinduism. Because that's not ahimsa. But yeah, it's my definition says what God must do. But Brahma is seeing, he liberated him. He became completely free from all the reactions of his past sins. Any such, you know, the bad thing coming to him, and he was liberated. The modes of nature, karma, and liberation. Boom. Seeing the form of the Lord by leaving his body. How fortunate. So it depends on mercy, but, you know, we may have our idea of what mercy is. Mercy is, to some people, the stock market starts going back up again. And unless that happens, there's no God. Or something. You know, he's not being merciful. After all, so many people, their well-being is dependent upon the positioning of the stock market. You know, so what somebody has as a conception of receiving mercy may be totally distorted. So, the best way to receive mercy, as indicated in Bhagavad Gita, is to receive the association of one who is delivering that mercy on behalf of Krishna. Then you get the mercy. And even that, you know, the form of that mercy may not be the way that I'm, you know, I got my requisition slip in, saying I want this and I want that. Jai Om Jai Jagadisha Hare. Anything over in this quiet side over here? Just checking. Okay. Yes?
I received an email today with a question concerning the Bhagavatam and I'm not sure how to answer it.
Is it at all related to our topic here?
Well, yeah, I'm hesitant to ask it because I'm not sure. It's not related to the topic.
Okay.
But
no one else is putting their hand up. Go right ahead.
We hear that Srila Vyasadeva compiled the Vedic literatures, including the Puranas, and that afterwards, when he was feeling discontent, he was instructed by Narada Muni to compile the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the question was, if the Srimad Bhagavatam was his final composition, why we find reference to the Bhagavat Purana in the other Puranas?
Oh, that's easy. Would you like to know the easy answer? When he compiled there's 18 principal Puranas, and there's Puranas and there's Upa Puranas. So the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam was available from the initial, but it was in just the essence form, and what we now have is expanded. So in those other Puranas, reference is made to the Srimad Bhagavatam, because in fact most of them refer to the Bhagavat Purana. He just hadn't completed it yet. He hadn't completed it. So they refer to the Bhagavat Purana as the emperor, as the best amongst us, and so on. So it was known when he compiled the principal Puranas. It just wasn't complete.
The Bhagavatam.
Bhagavatam, yes. After his instruction, after Narada's instruction to Vyas, then he compiled in his fullness. He compiled all the Puranas and the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then this event took place, where meeting with Narada, and Narada's instructions, sitting down in meditation, as Narada instructed, and then, based upon that realization, compiling, expanding in fullness, 18,000 verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, which he then wanted to instruct to Shukadeva Goswami. But Shukadeva Goswami left. So there's a detail in one of the other Puranas how then he cleverly brought him back so he can instruct him in the fullness of the Bhagavatam. He's Trikalagya. So two things. He's Trikalagya, so even before compiling the Bhagavatam, he's Trikalagya. And the second thing is that the whole situation of Vyas feeling despondent and not completing and so on, it's because he's Trikalagya. It's induced by the personality of Godhead. Much like two other things. How do we understand that Arjuna, an eternal associate of Krishna, lost it? And couldn't understand what his duty is and became lamenting and dropped his Gandiva bow and fell down, you know, like a wet noodle on the chariot. Couldn't even stand up. Arjuna, how's that? Induced by Krishna. Maharaj Pariksit. You know, in within the womb, he can withstand a Brahmastra. Certainly Krishna's protection, but, you know, it's described there specifically. The heat was sufficient that should have killed him. But because he was this powerful Kshatriya, he was able to bear the heat, plus Krishna protected ultimately from destruction. So such a personality becomes overwhelmed with thirst. And then Maharaj Pariksit, who is able to tolerate incredible things, becomes overwhelmed with anger. So he insults a Brahmana. He who is, you know, epitome of respect for Brahminical culture, insults a Brahmana. That's not Maharaj Pariksit. That's Krishna inducing him to do that so that the Bhagavatam can be spoken to Maharaj Pariksit. To create this scenario where the Lord is using his own devotee to instruct the world. Grandfather Bhishma, not saying anything when Draupadi is being disgraced in the right in the public forum, doing nothing. I mean, supposing Krishna didn't come to deliver unlimited sari, what would have happened? And there is Grandfather Bhishma, you know, remaining silent. Why? That's not Grandfather Bhishma. It's induced by Krishna for a reason. So those kinds of things where we find discrepancy in a person of such, it's this apichachudaracharobhajate. Sadur eva samantabhya. We have to see them in its same. So Vyasadeva is beyond sadhu. He's an incarnation of Krishna. So how is it he can blow it? You know, and not compile Srimad Bhagavatam after all. He didn't blow it. It was induced by Krishna so that that whole dialogue and every, you know, the whole thing could happen the way that it happened. Induced by Krishna. Because he's a Shaktivesha avatar, he's empowered by Krishna to act. And he's Trikalagya. But he's acting as an instrument for our edification. Okay, Nandan.
And, like you were saying that we know from scriptures and my experience also that material world is a place of suffering, but we are in conditioned souls like us in general, attached still. So we hear that Krishna consciousness, if we feel the happiness in Krishna consciousness, then we will not look for happiness in this material world. So can you please
you did a nice job. Maybe you should speak on it. If there's param drishtva navartate, if there's a greater happiness, one doesn't look for a lesser happiness. Here's a, you know, cheesecake, and here's a mud pie. Which would you like? No, there's no difficulty in making the choice. But there's a greater happiness. The happiness of spiritual contact on the platform of the soul is so fulfilling. The allurement of the attraction of sensual contact is zero. It's just like, it's not, it's insignificant. It's of no consequence. Of no consequence. Like Haridas Thakur. So absorbed in chanting of the holy name. The prostitute who was sent by Ramchandra Khan to have him fall down, he said, just sit down, let me finish my chanting. Deliberately so she could hear his chanting. And by hearing his chanting could become purified, and she became purified. It's not that his senses became agitated. Now, we're not Haridas Thakur, so we shouldn't do something like that, but Haridas Thakur has that capacity. So in that, where one is experiencing transcendental happiness, this other pales. So in then proportionate to our submission and faith in transcendence, we can also move about in the world and not be disturbed. That we all have some practical experience of. Things that may in the past have been what our lives were about, we can be around those things our lives were about and just doesn't faze us. It's not like, oh, I'm missing out on those things my life used to be about. Yes?
So how can we experience that spiritual?
By Krishna consciousness. By Krishna consciousness. Talk to Jai Jagannath about it. He knows all about it. By hearing. By enchanting. Shravanam Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, by Krishna consciousness. By regularly practicing in a sincere manner our Krishna conscious life and investing that Krishna consciousness in the day-to-day things that we do, whatever that may be. You know, each person in their position. Doing that for Krishna. And practicing. And hearing, chanting, remembering, carrying out our duties in that consciousness. By Krishna consciousness. What is it that you'd like to enjoy, Prahlad? Go ahead.
Why did Gandhi say that if the battle of Kurukshetra did not happen?
Why did Gandhi speak like that? Better ask Gandhi. If I was in before a different audience, I might speak a little differently. It's impersonalism. It's like saying you don't exist. You're just a force. You don't exist. That was his conception. That's his religious view. My Krishna is one who is a non-violent, passive, you know, person. Not that one. So it's like superimposing his own idea on the name Bhagavad Gita and calling that Bhagavad Gita. You got it? Okay. Does he get it? We'll find out later.
I think he got the word impersonal.
Impersonal, okay. It's a covering. Supposing you're in your bed and your mother says, Prahlad, it's time to get up. And you pull the blanket over your head. And you say, I'm not here. So Krishna's just disappeared by philosophy. But Krishna doesn't disappear by philosophy. He just tried to make Krishna disappear by philosophy. That's what he was doing. Impersonal. Yes.
How does one capture the mind and the heart? The mind is always active.
Will make your mind listen to your heart. Then they become one. So what does your heart want? It's So then you, if you're listening to your heart, then your mind will be there. We just have these other habits where our mind listens to so many other things. We're just, you know, a lifelong of, and lifetimes of other things. This happened just in the course of this long weekend. There was one of those cars with all four windows rolled down, and the person playing this rap music so loud that the car was rocking. Pop, 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 and then roll up the windows, and it still sounds like, you know, boom, boom. Now, what's that person's mind going to be like at the end of the day, or at the end of, you know, his life, at the end of, you know, 30 years of doing that? What's his mind going to be like? Then he may say, you know, what you just said. So we've done something else, but we've done it for a long time, and it's, our mind is conditioned to something else. It's, you know, very conditioned, very contaminated. So, you know, our heart says something else, but our mind has got all this conditioning going on. So we just, that we have to pay that price for continuing to bring the mind to that which is going to elevate it and purify it. Yeah. So, chanting. Nice. We'll have some nice kirtan. If the neighbors will let us, not. Can we have kirtan? It's not gonna. You warned everybody, or what?
We should have kirtan.
Okay. Okay. And reading, and worshiping, and you're just doing, trying to do things from the heart, and then direct the mind to listen to the heart, and then to act accordingly. Just another practice. Practice, 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 practice. It becomes then second nature. That's Prabhupada's teaching. You practice at something consistently, it becomes second nature. The other is the conditioned nature. Yes?
Maharaj, so you mean to say that if, you know, as human beings, when we have sufferings, you know, we always think about God. But when we are, you know, in the material world, every day, you know, we don't feel like, you know, just in the morning, usually we just pray for a few minutes. And afterwards, we don't remember. We are turning our back to God. And so, what I understand from your saying just now is by conditioning, even, you know, by practicing, just saying the chants every day, you think we'll be able to remember the God?
Not just by the mechanical type of chanting, but from the heart type of chanting. When we establish a relationship with Krishna, we experience once again our relationship with Krishna. We won't forget. You have children?
Yes.
Okay. When you're driving your car, or you're cooking, or you're doing something, do your thoughts very naturally and easily go to your children? Because you're attached to them. You're your mother. You think about your children because of that attachment. So if, similarly, that as that's materially very natural, from the platform of the soul, it's also very natural that we have an attachment for our eternal Father on the spiritual platform. The practice of chanting is not just like, you know, a stick to beat the mind. It's awakening the natural consciousness of the soul and our relationship with Krishna. It's, as we were saying with the youth group, it's a call. It's that, literally in the Sanskrit, it's vocative. Hara becomes Hare. We're calling, and Krishna's responding. And the essence of our calling is please accept me again in this relationship of service to you. Please accept me. Please engage me. Because the sound of Krishna's name and Krishna are not different, we're directly associating with Krishna. So it's not just a mechanical practice. It's a sadhana to bring our consciousness again to the point where we're in a pure state, again attached to Krishna. And then you can always think of Krishna. Naturally. Not just by repetition, but naturally. Completely naturally. As natural as it is for you to think of your children, that naturally. In the phrase that we read with the children, or the youth this afternoon from the Upanishads, like holding a walnut in your hand, like, you know, with that much clarity, the relationship with Krishna is you feel it, it's tangible and palpable and so satisfying, you can't not think of what that. That's a stage that gradually evolves through sadhana. Comes sadhya, the fruit of that sadhana. And the fruit is our natural attraction, our attachment, the natural affection and feelings of love we have for our eternal Father. This material part is just the reflection of that. So as strong as this one is, how strong is that one? But it's covered. We turned our back. We forgot. But it's there. It's there. A child that goes away from home, the father doesn't forget the child. Even the child doesn't forget the father. And the father is always very eager for the child to return. Natural. So on the spiritual plane so also, we're just a rebellious spirit. We can curtail that rebellious spirit and transform it once again into a loving spirit. It's awaiting us, very naturally. Nilesh.
Yes, Maharaj, like this establishing relationship with Krishna, I sometimes feel like, you know, there is overwhelming desire to connect with other devotees. And sometimes if I'm not able to do that, then I'm like sort of, I get little, I'm not able to remember Krishna.
The devotees is a connector to Krishna. Okay, well, keep connecting with the devotees. And if that doesn't happen, be patient. Krishna is not your servant. You beck, and he comes. That's not the dynamic. We serve. And we're patient. Krishna will respond in his terms, in his way, in his time. And it's not just, you know, it's not whimsical. It's, you know, in ways that will be in our interest. Because he's loving. But we don't necessarily know what that is. But be patient. Okay, let's have some kirtan. Yes? Do we need to close the door so that the neighbors don't hear too much of... Huh? Okay. Come on in. Or... Okay.
Do we have to have a disciple succession to develop attachment with the Supreme Lord Krishna? Or one can directly develop attachment with the Supreme Lord just by heartfelt chanting and dedication and sincerity?
Well, Krishna's answer is, here's how he answers in Adi Purana. In Adi Purana, he's also speaking to Arjuna, and he says to Arjuna, one who claims to be my devotee, he's not my devotee. But one who is the devotee of my devotee's devotee, that's my devotee. So there may be some expression of something. It's a little bit like Ekalavya. Now he developed skills by worshipping the Murti of Drona. But Drona said, who's this? I don't have a student that I taught this, how to shoot a bow, arrows through the mouth of the dogs. I didn't do that. Where's this? Take me to this person. So then he remembered, he's not my student. I rejected him as a student because he's not qualified. Okay, you're saying you're my student, then I can have Dakshin. Give me your thumb. The right one, please.
But isn't that rude?
No. It's protection. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary, because Drona understood something very powerful in the hands of a person who is not qualified can be very dangerous. So it's protection. Protection of the person and protection of the innocent, others. If you have something that's very powerful, you should be very careful who receives it. If you don't give it to an unqualified person, that's good. If the unqualified person steals it, you prevent them from misusing it. Not cruel. Okay.
Can I ask a final question?
Sure.
So, my understanding of suffering due to the birth and death.
Suffering is due to birth and death. That's your.
So, if you want to stop the suffering,
suffering is due to ignorance. And one part of ignorance is birth and death, but there's some other parts too. Mm-hmm. Old age and disease, the misidentification with that which we are not. That's behind the birth and death.
So if you stop the birth and death cycle, so you will stop the ignorance also, because you will no longer going to be ignorant.
It's the other way around. You won't stop birth and death without stopping ignorance. As long as there's ignorance, then there's going to be the expectation for happiness in something that's false. And that's going to perpetuate birth and death. The goal is not to explicitly stop birth and death. That's a symptom. It's like, if you have a fever, mm-hmm. there's a symptom. But that the cause is the virus that's causing the fever, or the infection that's causing the fever. So you have to disinfect the infection, then the fever's gone. That the root of birth and death is ignorance.
So how are you going to
deal with ignorance?
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge and devotion. We're hearing from Krishna, so it's like an antiseptic. You shine light on darkness, and the darkness is dispelled. You bring the illumination of knowledge, and ignorance is dispelled. But that's, that's limited, that's theoretical kind of knowledge, and then there's the practical kind of knowledge. The practical kind of knowledge is when there's submission unto, just like this question here about hearing, there's submission unto the preceptor or the one who's providing that knowledge, and then it becomes realized. Then it doesn't go away. It's enduring.
So that means that you are turning to the Krishna, or opening your doors to Krishna.
Yeah.
Can he? In other words,
he can do anything.
Yes or no? But if I say like this, you are responsible for your own action. There's a
That's
karma,
right.
And so.
That's
so
right.
Therefore, even though you open your doors to Krishna,
yeah.
you are responsible for your previous actions.
That's right.
So,
but he can remove that. If you surrender to Krishna, if anyone surrenders to Krishna, he can pardon you for that past. The example that's given is like the governor may go into a prison house, and he has the power to pardon somebody that's a prisoner. It's the laws of the state that put him in prison, and the ruling officer can go in and say, he's pardoned, reprieve. But Krishna can do that also.
So why didn't Krishna live a luxurious life?
Why didn't
why he live a luxurious life? You know, because this suffering and happiness, all the things. So
he's inviting others to come and be with him, and they're saying no. Prabhupada would say that about our temples. People are struggling. We say, come and live with us. Oh. There's too many no's. No meat, no fish, no eggs, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, no television. Horrible.
Isn't that the Krishna had like multiple wives or multiple queens? Krishna had like multiple queens.
Yeah, but he's not doing that in the mood of a sense enjoyer. Grandfather Bhishma said at the time of the Rajasuya Yajna, everyone appreciates me for my vow, my Dridhavrata, my great vow of meaning brahmachari. But I couldn't be in that situation and not be agitated that Krishna was in. He's the better renunciate than me. Because Krishna's mind was not at all disturbed or attracted to that situation. Although, from a worldly position, it may look like, wow, big time enjoyer. Etc. We'll have kirtan for